So what happens when you die? No one knows for sure, or at least no one has been able to prove what happens for sure, but it is a question we have pondered since the dawn of time. Some people believe that once your life ends, your soul or spirit moves into the afterlife. Where you go depends on how you lived your life. If you follow a set of predetermined rules or commandments, you'll spend the afterlife in heaven, a place of love and happiness as a reward for how you conducted yourself on earth. If you choose not to follow these rules, you get to spend eternity in a pleasureless, hot place known as hell as punishment. Others believe that when you die, that's it. Your biological matter decomposes and you become one with the earth. One of the most interesting beliefs as to what happens when you die is reincarnation. This is the concept that the non-physical essence of a living being begins a new life in a different form or body after biological death. In most beliefs involving reincarnation, the soul of a human being is immortal and does not disperse after the physical body has perished. Upon death, the soul merely becomes transferred into a newborn baby or an animal to continue its immortality. While many dismiss this as nonsense, there have been some well-documented cases that support at least the possibility that reincarnation is plausible. On this episode of the podcast, we'll present you a few of these stories, guaranteed to be some weird.
Welcome to the Some Weird Podcast, a podcast about strange and unusual stories told by us, a sister and brother team hailing from the island of Newfoundland. I am your co-host, Chrissy.
And I am your co-host, Barry. In this episode, we're going to be talking about what might happen after we die, specifically the possibility of reincarnation.
Like you said in your intro, what happens after we die is one of the greatest questions that humans have had since we formed religions to try to answer such big questions.
I think it's ever since mankind has become self-aware and they start thinking, this can't be it, what can be after? And I guess they start coming up with different ideas. Life on Earth is only the beginning and there's more afterwards.
Should we get this one started?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about reincarnation.
All right. So before I started researching for this episode, when I thought about reincarnation, I thought of it in terms of a belief in the Hindu religion. It's probably what comes to a lot of people's minds right at first. I don't know much about Hinduism. So from a crude Westerner's perspective, I'd say, I understood it as a belief that someone's soul continues after their physical body dies, but not in an eternal heaven or hell, like what is taught in the Catholic Church, which is what we were brought up in.
I'm personally open to anything is possible. I'm not sure what's actually true and what's not true, but I'm not of a belief that, because I believe this, everything else is impossible. There's no way it can be true. I'm open to anything, I guess, is the way I'm putting it.
Exactly. You don't know. So just because some guy in an itchy robe told you that it's true, that doesn't mean that it is. I'm the same as you, kind of open.
And not knocking religion in any way. No, that's not what we do here.
All right, whatever. We're not getting into religious stuff. Regardless, the process of that reincarnation where your soul gets returned to a new person, this continues until a soul gets it right. And then they can finally be promoted to a state of nirvana, which is a place where you wear plaid shirts and smell like teen spirit. But since we follow the Legion rules here, as we kind of went over, no debate on religion and no debate on politics, this episode is intentionally not about the religious idea of reincarnation. Rather, we're going to look at it from a purely secular perspective. And my part of the show is pretty much as secular as it can possibly be. I started off to research for this episode by reading pretty much the go-to book on the subject, which is called Children Who Remember Past Lives by a guy named Dr. Ian Stevenson.
Yes, and he actually comes into my story as well.
He's the man in this world. So the book was pretty interesting, but it has a pretty sensational title. Like it's kind of 80s daytime Oprah Winfrey, Geraldo Rivera type of title.
Yeah.
So I decided that I'd look into this author and see like how legit he could really be. What is this guy's credentials here?
Yep.
But let me tell you, this guy is the real deal.
Okay.
So Dr. Stevenson was a McGill-educated physician.
McGill as in Montreal?
Yep.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And he was chair of the Department of Psychiatry and the founder, check this out, the Department of Perceptual Studies at the University of Virginia.
Now, how can I get a job like this?
Okay, we're on the same wavelength. How does one get this job?
You need to be much more educated than I am. I think you start with that. So
maybe if you're a McGill-educated physician, you can waltz your way into this. But I'll get into how he gets into this job, actually. Okay. It could be an episode on its own. the Division of Perceptual Studies, DOPS, or maybe DOPS, let's call it DOPS, is the only university-based research center in the whole world that's dedicated to studying paranormal subjects like mediumship, near-death experiences, and of course, the subject of this episode, reincarnation. It's kind of like the real-life Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I mean, about as great of a job as you can have.
Oh my God, that'd be fantastic. It always strikes me, and clearly you as well, that when people have such interesting and non-traditional jobs, like studying paranormal as a full-ass career, how does one become a professional, university-endorsed, and backed paranormal researcher?
Yeah.
Why was this never presented to me as a job choice? But in the case of Dr. Stevenson, it came down to a desire to empirically study this worldwide phenomenon combined with a wealthy patron.
A wealthy patron?
A wealthy patron. Now, that patron was Chester Carlson, the inventor of the Xerox machine.
Oh.
Yeah. So upon Carlson's death in 1968, he left a sizable part of his estate to an endowment for Stevenson to continue his research in the field of reincarnation. And I can't let this pass without pointing out the irony of the inventor of a copy machine effectively making it possible to study how physical bodies are copies for a single soul. That's kind of fucking weird, right?
It is, yeah.
But the Xerox machine guy made this possible, basically.
In the wrestling business, we call the Xerox guy a money mark.
What do you mean?
So a money mark is someone who's like a huge fan of wrestling. Someone has so much money, they're actually going to start their own promotion. So you get to meet your heroes type of thing, and they call it a money mark. So
there's enough people that have enough money to start their own promotion that there's
Doesn't happen very often. Usually these money marks phase out pretty quick because they run out of money pretty quick. They use whatever money they got to start a business, and the carny wrestlers come in and bleed him dry, and then he's broke, and they move on to the next guy.
It never fails to amuse me or amaze me how you get wrestling in there every time.
Yeah, it's a gift.
It is. Okay, so with this money from the Xerox guy, Stevenson founded the Division of Perceptual Studies, and for the next several decades, he dedicated his career to figuring out what happens after we die. What a fucking job, man.
Yeah.
And the University of Virginia is not like crackpot fringe university. It is a top university in the United States.
And the great thing with this job is there's just no proving that he's wrong, because you don't know until you die.
Yes.
When the guy finally died, he's like, yes, I got it right, or I fucked that up.
So Stevenson, he gets to have a job of studying what happens after we die. Super cool. And in his research, he documented thousands of cases where it was believed that a person was reincarnated, and he published 14 books and countless academic papers on this subject. So what did his research indicate? First, he found that most reported cases of children who remember past lives were in places like India, Turkey, and other parts of Southeast Asia. And that seems pretty much par for the course, right? So a belief in reincarnation is culturally prevalent in those areas of the world. So that seems to be where you would find the most types of cases. But he also found that there were cases really all over the world and in every single culture. In almost all the cases that he studied, the children who remember their past lives usually started talking about it at about age 2 or 3, which is really when you start talking anyway. And they stopped talking about it at about age 6 to 7. Another commonality was the past lives that were remembered were usually ones that ended suddenly or violently. The previous life usually ended pretty close to the start of the next life, so within a couple of years. And that the life remembered was usually one of a pretty normal person. So there's a running joke in psychiatry that people are claiming to be Napoleon, or like, you know, you're always brought back as like some great person, a great leader, or someone of historical significance. But most of the cases that Dr. Stevenson studied were normal kids remembering normal past lives. So aside from simply accepting that kids talking about past lives must be proof for reincarnation, what did Stevenson do? Starting with the past lives person's name, he and his team would search public records for that person's death. From there, they could start matching what the child said about the previous life to actual facts. They could confirm the date, the manner of death, family members' names, addresses, etc. Through the past lives family, they could verify other things of the past life like mannerism, likes and dislikes, and personality traits. So the previous lives family could observe the child and see similarities between their loved one and this new person. Now, it's easy to believe that a child who's already part of a culture that believes in reincarnation can be directly or inadvertently fed facts about a known person who recently died. However, in many cases, not all, but in many cases, the previous person was not known to the family at all. And then there's the birthmark situation. As I mentioned earlier, often the remembered previous life was ended suddenly or violently. Prevalent in all of these cases, or many of these cases, sorry, are birthmarks on the new life that correspond to the fatal wound of the previous life. And this part I find really fucking freaky.
Yeah.
For example, the case of a boy in India who remembered being a man who was killed by a close-range shotgun to the chest. The boy had a light-colored splotchy birthmarks in the middle of his chest, so it looked like...
A gunshot, yeah.
Gunshot, mm-hmm. When Dr. Stevenson got the autopsy report from the previous past life remembered, it included the pathologist's sketch of the shotgun wounds, and it was almost exactly in the same spot and pattern as this kid's birthmarks.
That's pretty wild.
It's really weird. Another case of a boy in Thailand, he remembered his previous life was that of his uncle, you know, obviously somebody that was known to the family, but that uncle was murdered by being stabbed in the head, and the boy was born with a huge birthmark on the side of his head that looked like an actual stab wound.
Wow.
Messed up, right?
So what is a birthmark besides a hint into the past life?
I think a birthmark is something that you have either at or near birth.
It's like a spot.
Like a spot, right? So that's a couple of examples of they remember their past life and then their birthmarks correspond to like the wounds that the previous life died from. And then there's something called experimental birthmark. So this is something when shortly after a family member dies, someone will make a mark on their body, usually with soot. And then the idea would be that when that soul is reborn, the new person's body will have a birthmark where that soot mark was made.
That's weird, but if I were to be reborn, why would I want to be reborn with someone with this weird-ass mark on them?
I don't know that you'd want to be. I think it's a way...
To know that's who it is, I guess, maybe?
Yes, yes, yes. So hopefully someone isn't a jerk and just put like a big paw print across your face.
Swear words.
Oh my God. So that's what they do. They make a mark so that they can tell which person is reincarnated as them.
Yep.
And this is really wild and it seems very far-fetched, but Stevenson actually did find several cases in Southeast Asia where this experimental birthmark actually seemed to work. So they'd put a little thumbprint by the person who recently died, usually like by their ankle or like somewhere like not, not across their face. And then there'd be a baby born with a birthmark in the same place. It's very weird. And so far, all the research that I've mentioned was done in places where reincarnation is generally accepted as that's the way it is, right? But also, as I mentioned, there's many cases of children remembering past lives all over the world. And now I'm going to get into the case of James Leiniger, an American boy who was born in 1998 and remembered a past life as a World War II pilot, otherwise known as the story you are going to do.
That's right.
Do you know this story or?
I saw this, the headline of the story.
Okay.
And I said, that's going to be very interesting. That's what I'm going to do. And that's as far as I got. And I told you I got my story and this is what it is. And you said, don't do this. I said, oh, that's what I, that's okay.
Well, hopefully you do find it interesting. James Leiniger was born in 1998. And when he was 2 years old, he started having very consistent nightmares, which must be horrible for parents to watch their kid go through this.
Yes.
Yeah. And at this age, he was only two, he wasn't really able to describe what the nightmares were. But one night, I guess maybe he might have been between two and three, because you know, kids at that age are not really clear speakers. Like they're okay, yeah. Like parents can pick it out or whatever. But one night his mother said that she was able to pick out that James was saying something like the airplane is on fire and little man cannot get out. This is mildly terrifying, I think, for a mother to hear. Where would he possibly hear something like this at that age?
Yep.
And then one night when James was still awake, he started kicking his legs and saying, little man goes like this. So picture him lying on his back and just kicking his legs like he's trying to like kick the wall, that kind of a thing.
Little man. Is that in reference to him or reference? I guess you'll get into it.
But. Well, his mother asks who Little Man is, because that's like a fairy. That's kind of scary, right?
The shovel. Yeah.
He was smoking a pipe and he had a jacket with patches on the elbows. So his mother said, who is Little Man? And James just simply replied, it's me. So his mother gently excused herself and moonwalked the fuck out of that room. That's what I would have done, I think. I made that part up. That's not really what happened. But she did go to James's dad, and she said, come and watch what the hell's going on here. Come out and check this fresh hell. Anyway, so his dad comes into the room and decides to ask James some questions. Let's figure out what the hell's going on. Or maybe, like, where is he seeing this? Where did he hear this? What is happening with our kid? So the dad proceeds to have this conversation. What happened to your plane? It crashed because it was on fire. Why was it on fire? It was shot down. Who shot it down? The Japanese. So this was happening in the early 2000s, not in the 1940s. Why a child would even know this story at all is really bizarre.
Yeah.
James's parents didn't even believe in reincarnation, but this recurring nightmare and the oddly specific details from James made them wonder what was going on. The report of this story, and again, it's the family's interviews. That's where this is coming from, right? The report of the story says that the parents did not ask any leading questions. I will assume that that was true. I don't know. I wasn't there, but let's assume that that's correct. They did, however, ask James to elaborate whenever he brought up his past life. So they didn't sit down and say, tell me about the airplane that you flew. But when he would bring it up, they would try to ask him some questions or ask him to elaborate. What kind of plane did you fly? A Corsair, says the two-year-old. What the fuck? Who knows what that is? It took off from a boat called the Natoma. So either this kid is being fed the information or he's a hell of a historian.
Yeah.
James's dad didn't know even what these things were, so he Googled Natoma, and he found out that there was an aircraft carrier called the Natoma Bay, which was deployed in the Pacific Theater of World War II. As he's getting older, he's able to speak more, articulate more, right? Yep. So James begins to talk about a pilot named Jack Larson, who appeared to be in his dreams. Back to the Google machine he goes, James's dad. This time, his dad did not find any record of any pilot by that name on the Natoma Bay. But maybe this is really just a crazy coincidence after all. Maybe he's picking it up from somewhere. Who knows? And then James was looking at a book that belonged to his grandfather, and the book was about World War II. When he saw a picture of Iwo Jima, he said, that's where my plane was shot down. What the fuck?
Jeez.
Can you imagine?
No, that's pretty crazy.
Again, just assuming this is a true story, right? Like, we don't know for sure. Okay. The dad goes back to the Google machine, and he found out that the Natoma Bay, that aircraft carrier, was at Iwo Jima. You'd have to be like a World War II historian to know these sorts of details, right? Like a general person with interest doesn't know. They know what Iwo Jima is, probably.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty famous.
Yeah, but they don't know, like, what boats were there.
Yeah, what people, yeah, they wouldn't know that. Isn't Iwo Jima the famous picture of the flag going up? Isn't that Iwo Jima?
It is, and that picture was staged.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, but I think the story was the American soldiers mount the American flag, and then a photographer, because I guess there's war photographers deployed with the soldiers, right? It got to be.
Yeah. What gig that is.
Fuck that gig, man.
Yeah, sorry.
But anyway.
Oh, taking pictures of babies instead of doing that shit.
Exactly. I'd probably even rather say, let's take pictures of pets, because babies can cry. But
That's true.
So, yeah, the photographers saw them do that and said, holy shit, that would be a great picture. Do that again. So it was true what they did, but then also that photo was a reenactment, say.
Of it, yeah. I guess it's kind of hard to catch something as iconic as that in the moment, right?
Yeah. You know, Iwo Jima, that's exactly the picture that you have. Like, everyone knows that. All right, so the dad found a website for a Natoma Bay reunion, and he reached out to them under the guise of writing a book about the Natoma Bay. A vet who was on the Natoma Bay said that there was no Corsairs. That was the type of plane that James said he flew. He said there was no Corsairs on the ship, but there was a soldier named Jack Larson.
Wow.
When James was 3, his nightmares seemed to start to taper off, but he did talk about his past life more and more. He also started drawing pictures of World War II planes in battle. And he always signed his name James 3. And when he asked, like, why do you write James 3? He'd say, because I'm James 3. And they're like, okay, whatever. So maybe he's 3 years old, right? And that's why he's writing it. But he continued to sign his name James III even after he turned four. So he was just James III all the time. Meanwhile, Dad secured himself an invitation to the Natoma Bay reunion. Here, he learned that there was a pilot on the Natoma Bay named James M. Houston, who was shot down by the Japanese near Chichijima, which was a supply base less than 200 miles from Iwo Jima. He was told that Houston was flying an FM-2 Wildcat, not a Corsair.
Okay.
James' dad managed to get in contact with James M. Houston's sister and forge a relationship with her. Remember, he's saying he's writing a book about the Natoma Bay and everything. So the sister sends him pictures of her brother, including one with him posing by a Corsair. So he did fly one. He also learned that James M. Houston was a junior. So remember, James would sign his name James III?
Yeah.
So James, the person that they think he's remembering the life on, is James Jr., making James the kid, the third James. Yeah. Very oddly and coincidentally, a veteran named Jack Durham found James's dad's post on a message board about Chichijima, and he reached out to him. The dad met with Durham, who was an eyewitness to the crash of James Houston. Durham said that it was a Corsair that Houston was flying on the day that he was shot down by the Japanese. So, you know, not every detail of the whole story lines up exactly, but
there's enough there, yeah.
Yes. In 2000, the veterans remembering something that happened in the 1940s, of course, is a huge and traumatic thing. And, you know, they would remember, but maybe they don't remember each and every single detail, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, they must have been what, in their 70s or 80s.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Well, if you're 20 in the 40s, you're 80 in the 2000s.
Right. And certainly the little boy, James, he wouldn't know any of the details.
No, for sure.
Right? His parents weren't in World War II vets, and they didn't seem to be World War II fanatics or anything like that. But that's the story of James Leiniger, James III, World War II pilot. To this day, he still says, yeah, I'm reincarnated soul of, yep, James M. Houston, a guy who was shot down at Iwo Jima or Chichijima.
So he's like, what, 25 now-ish? Something like that?
He's born in 1998, so whatever that means.
25, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so he's still saying that to this day, and he remembers it all. Now. I can only put myself in a parent's shoes. If I was there and my son started talking to me about getting shot down over Iwo Jima or Chichijima or whatever it was, I'd be like, what in the fuck is happening here?
Really? Yes. I don't think I would be like, let me see if I can find out what's going on. I think I'd be like, this is fucking crazy, and I'm going to pretend this is not happening.
We're going to bury this. Let's play Pokemon.
Fortunately, I've not been in the position to have to deal with such a thing, but what a crazy ass story that is.
It's interesting that he still believes it. Like, some of the ones you see is like, you know, when he turned 5 and 6, it kind of fades away type of thing, right?
But they still remember remembering. They just don't remember any new stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, and he's not like going around like, I was the reincarnation of James M. Houston. He's like, nope, that's something that happened to me. It just, it is what it is. I'm my own person now, but that's what happened. Do you think that's strong enough evidence? I don't know. It's all circumstantial.
It is. There's no way to prove it, obviously. I mean, the big thing with me is the age and the child and the innocence of a child. Like, how could a child doctor that up in his mind? Like, especially specific examples and names of ships and things in the World War from when he's 2 and 3 years old. Unless he's watching like World War II in color in the background and he's hearing a couple things and picking up on it. I don't know.
Nowadays, I could almost see someone that age or maybe a bit older watching YouTube videos about stuff like this. Like, my kids watch all kinds of crazy shit, you know. Half the ideas I get for this show come from them. But in 2000, that would not have been the way it was. YouTube wasn't even invented.
Yeah, it wasn't even around then, yeah. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, I know, right? That's it.
That's a crazy story. Like, I mean, whether you believe or don't believe, there's just so much there. I mean, I guess it could turn out to be a hoax. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, assuming it's not, there's a lot of coincidences there that are difficult to ignore.
Right. And it's a narrative. So you didn't do a blood test to figure it out. You know, there's no hard scientific proof there. So is it the Ralph Wiggum effect where, you know, and they were in the closet and they were having babies and the baby smiled at me, No, that's not what happened. You think that's what happened, but, you know, just because you're telling the story that way, that's your memory playing tricks. But Who knows? Even if that story is not true, the whole situation that there is an actual division of perceptual studies that you could actually go to and learn as in a university setting is freaky enough.
It is. It's a very compelling case. And again, the case I'm going to talk about here now is another one that Dr. Stevenson investigated or worked on as well. It's the story of the Pollock twins of England. Again, it's one of the most compelling documented cases of reincarnation. Again, it's been studied by skeptics and believers alike, and some think this is actual proof that reincarnation exists, and I guess others just believe it's a hoax or they put cracks into the story.
Mm-hmm.
But the story revolves around the Pollock family. Like I said, they're from Hexham, England, which is an area I have no idea where it is. Don't know much about the geography of England. So the Pollock family were a Catholic family, and as good Catholics that they were, they had six youngsters.
Which...
There's a great skit. Is it Monty Python or they yes. start giving the kids away because we couldn't afford to keep them anymore?
Every sperm is sacred.
Yeah, that's right. So again, they had six youngsters, four boys, two girls. So the two girls were named Joanna and Jacqueline. One was born in 1946, the other in 1951. In 1957, tragedy struck the family when the two girls were killed in an automobile accident while on their way to church with a family friend. They were killed by a woman named Marjorie. She recently tragically lost her kids. Not that this has anything to do with the story, but she was intoxicated while behind the wheel and ended up causing an accident.
Tragedy all around on all sides there.
Exactly, for sure, yeah. So as you would, the family's parents, which were John and Florence, were grief-stricken over the event, and how could you not be losing two daughters? John, the father, believed that the incident could be a punishment from God due to his fascination with reincarnation.
This guy thought he was being punished for thinking about reincarnation, so his children were killed?
Yeah, it really makes you question religion, huh?
Why wouldn't he be killed?
Well, I guess there can be some saying that there's more suffering for you losing your kids than it would be dying yourself.
Point taken, yeah.
But anyway, I mean, it really makes you question, like, if there is a God and God's supposed to be good and great, is he really going around punishing you for questioning something? Like, if that's what he's all about, I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah, I'll leave that alone.
Yeah, that's right. Despite their grief, Florence ended up getting pregnant again because Catholics. So John believed that they were having twins, even though the midwives only ever heard one heartbeat. And again, I don't know what the ultrasound technology was in the late 50s or whatever.
I'd say nil.
Nil, because today you'd never get away with that. It'd be pretty obvious that you're having twins because you'd see it right on a camera. And these 3D ones you can do now, you can see their faces and everything, right? But...
Yeah, they're weird. Yeah. I never had a 3D thing.
I did. They look kind of freaky, but I will say this. The one we had of our son, it was amazing. It was very accurate to what he looked like. So.
I should hope so.
I guess that's what it is, right? It was freaky to see, but it was also cool to see. So anyway, October 4th, 1958, Florence gave birth to twin daughters, Jillian and Jennifer. John believed that the reason that they were twins is he had the reincarnation of the two daughters who died in the crash. Florence, on the other hand, was a staunch Catholic, and she didn't believe reincarnation for a minute because she believed in the church's teachings. However, there were many strange and interesting coincidences that began to form between her daughters and the dead sisters. So first off, and you discussed this in your discussion on Stevenson's work, is both Jillian and one of the dead sisters, Joanna, had birthmarks the size of a thumbprint on the same area on their hips.
Huh.
Yep, they had the exact same birthmark. The other twin, Jennifer, had a birthmark on her forehead, and it was similar to a scar Jacqueline received due to a fall in 1954. Again, right out of Stevenson's work there. Although they were identical twins, they started looking less and less like one another and more like the dead sister that they were reincarnated into.
Sorry, yeah. I kind of like a creep go up my spine then.
Yeah, so when their mother brought down their old toys, Jillian instantly gravitated towards Joanna's toys, while Jennifer did so to Jacqueline's.
Yeah.
So not long after the twins were born, the family moved from Hexham to Whitley Bay. A few years later, they did return to the Hexham area just to go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
All the twins were very young when they moved away. They began remembering areas where they'd never been before. For example, John was walking the twins up a hill towards the church, and one of the twins said, "Oh, there's the school we went to, and behind there's the playground we used to always play at."
That's creepy.
Yeah. Florence didn't believe in reincarnation at all, but again, there were so many things happening, she couldn't just explain it, so she wasn't sure what to make of it all, right? It was getting to the creepy stage.
Mm-hmm.
One day, Jillian was looking at the birthmark on Jacqueline's head, and she proceeded to tell an accurate account of how Jennifer received a scar, specifically referencing a bucket that she hit. There was another time when they were like kind of just playing on the floor, rolling around, and all of a sudden they started
fuck kind of game is that?
Well, whatever they're doing anyway. But and it ended up turning into a role play of like the car crash. They're starting to say, this is where you were when the car hit us and this is the blood coming out of your eyes and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, right? God. These are freaky kids.
What a fun game. They end up having a fear of cars, and anytime they walk and they see cars coming, they get like really scared and they be like, oh, that's the car coming for us.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Other coincidences kept piling up. For example, some of the old neighbors that they met when they went to Hexham, they knew their names even though they never met them before. They also knew the names of some of their sister's friends. They liked the same songs, all this kind of stuff, right?
Okay.
This case kind of caught the attention of Dr. Ian Stevenson, like you mentioned about, who wrote that book.
He's the man.
Yeah, that's right. So as part of his research, he did interview the twins. He argued, and you mentioned this in your part too, that cases involving children are more credible than others because children are less likely to make things up or even know what reincarnation is, right? What's interesting in this case is that once the twins hit 5, all similarities, references, and memories from the dead sisters kind of faded away. They still kind of knew of it, but they never got any new memories after that. So obviously there's some skeptics into the research and case. So the parents maintained throughout their whole life that they never mentioned anything about their kids. They didn't know any, like you said, the leading questions or anything like that. I guess some of the skeptics would say, how could you not have talked about your dead daughters to daughters that were born so soon afterwards? But the other side of it was, and then what more skeptics even more point to, is that, okay, so maybe the parents didn't speak. They did have 4 brothers.
Oh, well.
Surely the brothers could have implanted some memories or some ideas or some conversations about what their sisters were like to these kids, and that's kind of how they kind of form some of these memories, right?
That one is definitely more believable.
The researchers claimed that the mother, Florence, badly wanted to believe that they weren't reincarnations because of her Catholic beliefs. She almost considered it a mortal sin. But there's so many similarities, and there were some few plausible explanations. Like, she didn't know what it could be, right?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to believe it, and she took no comfort in thinking they were reincarnations of their previous kids, and she was very uncomfortable with it. Stevenson, who studied 42 pairs of twins who remember past lives in part of his research.
Okay, that's a lot.
He concludes that the Pollock twins' case is one of the strongest existing evidences in favor of reincarnation. He said there's just so many similarities there, so many coincidences, that at some point, a series of coincidences can't be coincidences anymore, right? It has to be something more to it than that. I tried to see if the Pollock twins are still alive, but I couldn't find anything for it. But the big thing was that Stevenson really believed, based on his research, that this is one of the strongest cases and that there's too many coincidences to be statistically possible.
Given the two example stories, so James Lineker and the Pollock twins, in my mind, James Lineker is a more believable story.
I believe so too, because his was a complete stranger, whereas these were family members who, even if no one ever talked about it, there would be clues, there'd be toys, there'd be old clothes, there'd be some pictures, there'd be something that could predetermine some sort of memory, right?
And one of the points in your story that were made by, I guess, probably from Dr. Stevenson, was that they only heard one heartbeat, so they thought there would only be one baby. And then there were twins, right? Yeah. So that's a fact. And then later they say, well, they were identical twins, but then they started to look less alike. I'm like, you didn't even know there were two people to start with. How do you know they're identical twins? All babies are identical twins. They all look alike.
That's true, yeah.
For me, that's kind of weak. And then them looking similar to their sisters is like, yes, that's how genetics works. Families have similar traits, you know? I see that as much weaker, and exactly your other point of the toys were around, the clothes were around, the four brothers were around.
Yeah.
They weren't in the same house and town for their whole life because they moved to that other place, which sounded quite similar to Whitless Bay.
Yeah, Whitley Bay, yeah.
Yeah, but the family dynamic is the same, and they would have the same mannerisms. To me, that's a little less believable. So it's weird.
It is, but like I said, you can have the same mannerisms as someone in your family, even though you never met them or weren't around them when they grew up or things like that, right? So, I mean, that's the genetics of it all. Like,
it could just be genetics. Like, I've told you this story before about when I was standing on a random street in Ottawa, and a complete stranger came up to me completely out of the blue and asked me if I was our mom's daughter.
I don't remember that.
I never told you that story?
No.
Total stranger in Ottawa, which is a pretty big city.
Yeah.
And quite far away from Carbonear.
Yeah.
She was so sure that I looked so much like our mom that she had to come up to a total stranger and ask. She said, are you King's daughter? Yeah. And I said, yes. And she said, I grew up with your mother in Carbonear. I haven't seen her since, I mean, before she was married, obviously, because she used her maiden name. So that would have been 1970. So before then, And I had to come up to you because you look so much like her. You had to have been her daughter.
That's wild.
That's fucked up. And I'm not the reincarnation of, Mother,
right.
Because she's currently still alive. In fact, that's she was right. out gardening today. So
that's right, yeah.
So similarities in the way people look or act, any person could see that in certain cases, right? But I don't think that it's necessarily not a true story. I just don't think it's as strong of a proof as the James Lineker story.
Last episode, we talked about the Mandela effect, and we also discussed deja vu. The three of these are all kind of very similar in nature.
They are. How you remember things and why things feel weird. But even if they weren't the reincarnation, those were some creepy kids reenacting, like, this is where the blood comes out of your eyeballs. Kids, stop. Yeah. Stop being a living horror movie, please. You're distressing me.
Yeah, we've all had a deja vu feeling at some point in our lives, and it really freaks you out when it does happen. But I'm not sure if that's evidence that, you know, it happened in a former life or anything like that, or a parallel universe.
Right. The worst deja vu is the one that goes on a little too long.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do deja vu in another episode.
For sure. It'd be like a trilogy.
We're getting weirder and weirder. Anyway, want to clue it up?
Before we clue it up, let's go a couple quick things here.
Okay.
Do you believe in reincarnation?
I don't not believe in reincarnation. I'll say that. So in other words, I don't completely discredit it.
Yep.
Maybe it doesn't happen to everybody, but maybe it's possible that it does happen to some people. What about you?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, whereas I believe that the possibility does exist. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not one of those people who is against my religious beliefs, so I definitely don't believe it.
Oh, no.
But I would definitely go as far as to say I would question it. I'm not convinced that is the real deal, but I'm not closing my mind on it completely, I guess.
What else you got?
What do you think you would be reincarnated to in your next life, assuming you believe it existed?
Based on my performance in this life?
I guess so, yeah.
Well, I guess I'm going to come back as a fairy because I'm not good enough for heaven or hell.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's a good throwback to the thing.
What about you? Same?
Yeah, probably. What would you want to be reincarnated to? Let's take human off the list, saying that you can't be a human.
Probably a well-loved dog.
I was the exact same thing I was thinking.
Being a dog owner, my dog is treated like the best thing ever, and yours too. So that seems to be a great gig.
Yeah, you're fed whenever you want. You just got to look cute and you get fed. You go out, you take a shit, and your owner picks it up for you. I mean, it's just a pretty good day, right?
Yeah.
Assuming you believe in reincarnation, what do you think you were in the past life?
Oh, geez, these are good questions. Excluding humans, right? I can't be a human?
Let's give a human one and a non-human one.
Okay, so clearly I was Napoleon.
That's right.
Though I'm taller than Napoleon. I don't know, fucking Irish washerwoman? That's what I'm going with.
Yeah. I would definitely say I was somebody insignificant. Nobody in history books wrote about it. Let's put it that way. Non-human, what do you think you were?
Non-human? Probably a cat.
A cat?
Which probably explains my introverted nature.
Okay.
And I like to have things clean. So I was probably a cat.
That makes sense.
Yeah. What about you?
I don't know. Like I said, I had these questions here. I never even thought to write down my answers myself. So,
well, you got to come up with it now.
What's something that's very unprepared? Easily fooled.
A capybara.
A capybara. Yeah, that's probably me. A capybara.
Friend to all. Riding on the backs of alligators. Diving in pools. Being the pet of the tick. That's what you were.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
I thought that'd be a fun little activity there.
That is fun. If you guys have better answers to what you think B and Barry were in a past life or will be in a future life, let us know. And if you have better answers than we have for what you were in a past life or would be in a future life, let us know that too.
Yeah. And if you think you've been reincarnated and you have a story of your past life, we'd love to hear about it for sure.
So if you want to share those things with us, you can reach us through our email, which is someweirdpodcast@gmail.com.
Or on the Twitter or Instagram @someweirdpod.
Or our website, someweirdpodcast.com.
If you haven't done so already, please follow, subscribe wherever you listen so you'll never miss an episode.
And if you've enjoyed this episode, I certainly did. This was fun. Yeah,
this was fun.
Yeah. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen so others can discover. And don't be afraid to tell a friend about the Some Weird Podcast.
Reincarnation. Something weird, bye.
Something weird. I think currently my favorite thing to do is just go to sleep. That's like my favorite thing.
So in the afterlife, you'll be dead. Always asleep. Beautiful.
What's your favorite thing to do lately? Run 30 kilometers?
No, that's definitely not my favorite thing. That's probably the hell portion of the afterlife.
It is what you're doing, though.
Yeah, so today is September 4th. On September 10th, I'll be running a marathon. I've been training for the last, I don't know, 20 weeks or so. So the next time you hear recording, I'll be after completing it, hopefully, unless I'm unable to complete the marathon. So
If you do die during the marathon, if you don't mind, try to come through to me somehow in these electronic recordings or something like that. It would be great for the podcast if you could just go ahead and do that.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, anyway,